Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, as we have been reporting right throughout the morning, a major search and rescue operation is underway in Baltimore and Maryland in the United States after a cargo ship crashed into the city's landmark Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing that bridge to collapse into the river. And while we've been on air, the Baltimore City Fire Chief James Wallace has been addressing a news conference, and he was asked how long people could survive in that water. Here's what he said.
We'll be guided by our dive teams. We will determine what the temperature of the water is. The other issue that we have out there is this water is current influenced. So right now we think the tide is coming back in. That adds a bit of a challenge to us also. We can certainly dive in these conditions, but we have to take a lot of factors into play, right? The fact that there may be trauma involved, they have been in the water an extended period of time. But also remember, we're battling darkness. So, you know, it's quite possible that we may have somebody there that we've not seen yet. And as they work closer to the debris field, you know, they'll obviously make those determinations. But we're going to rely on the experts, which are our dive masters that are here, our dive team, to tell us when they believe we've reached that non-survivability point.
Okay, and it is daylight there in Baltimore as that rescue attempt continues. And I'm joined on the line now by Sean Boyce, who's a master mariner based in Rosslare Harbour. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Claire.
This stretch of water, you've been through it. You've transited through this part of the River Patapsco in Baltimore, have you?
Yeah, I would have done so, Claire, many years ago during my training, I suppose about 12 years ago now. But I suppose, first of all, my thoughts and prayers are with my fellow seafarers in that part of the world and with those affected by the tragedy there this morning.
You've had a look at the footage, I'm sure, as we all have had. My goodness, it was so dramatic, and we've been speaking to experts in this area and they've never seen anything like it. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it's truly shocking, really. As a master mariner and a pilot, it's our worst nightmare for something like that to happen, Claire. It's you know, catastrophic and tragic. Really huge disaster, you know, the human element and obviously the environmental factors involved.
Yeah, because, you know, we've heard some speculation that maybe this big cargo ship had lost power, that people who were watching it before the impact could see the lights going on and off. And that might explain why it drifted into that supporting leg of the bridge.
That would be the most likely reason, I suppose, Claire. And obviously, it's very difficult to speculate at this time. But, you know, as a pilot or as a master of a ship, you're dealing with the human element, you're dealing with climatic conditions and mechanics. And those are probably the three most volatile influences that we have in our world, I suppose. And you have very little control over either one of those or all three combined. So that is a highly likely reason for the catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult, you know, in those situations. You're in control for as long as you possibly can be, but when one of those items or multiple items come into play, it's very, very difficult.
Now, we have seen this morning that there were two pilots on this cargo ship. What does that tell us about the operation to get it out of the port and the size of the vessel?
Well, I suppose, Claire, the most likely reason for two pilots on board that vessel is that she was 300 metres long. And I suppose, just to give listeners an idea of that, that's over twice the length of the Pitch and Cove Park. She was carrying, she has a capacity of over 9,000 20-foot containers or 5,000 40-foot containers. So, you know, that just gives you an idea of the size and the height. And she's 50 metres wide as well. So it's likely that there was two specialised container pilots in charge assisting each other to get through that very tricky, you know, waterway. A less likely scenario would be that there potentially was somebody training with a senior pilot there, but I would say that it's two specialised pilots there on the container ship transiting that waterway.
Purely because of the size of the vessel and also just this tricky operation of getting something that size out of a port like Baltimore.
Exactly, yeah. So you've got several factors involved there. You've got the size of the vessel itself, the the height, the depth of the vessel, which a lot of people don't think of when they see a huge ship. There's a lot of ship under the water as well. The width of the navigable water, and obviously then hazards such as shallow water on either side of you. We would speak about air draft, which is your height for when you pass under overhead obstructions such as the bridge. So there's a lot of factors at play here. So it's highly likely that the two pilots were assisting each other, and that would be a normal thing. You know, we use two pilots often with large gas carriers, with container ships. So it is again a common practice. You know,
You know, in the pictures in the lead up to the collision, we can see as it was approaching the bridge that it was trying to change direction, and then we saw black smoke emerging from the vessel. Now, we've discussed the possibility that maybe power was lost, but what else might explain that, Sean?
Yeah, so what may have happened is that the pilots and the master may have used either a kick ahead or a stern on the engine to stabilise the directional stability of the vessel. Obviously, they would have known that they were heading where they didn't want to go. That's one factor, that a large engine movement was used and that would have produced a smoke, or potentially some catastrophic mechanical failure would have produced that smoke. You know, so it's, you know, these mariners, when they're approaching a danger, no matter how bad things are getting, you're trying to the very, very, very last second to improve things, to make them better. And sometimes it's inevitable that you're going to have an accident or a collision, and you try to minimize the effect of that. So you try and think of the ship, the crew, the people, the environment, and of course the local area that you're operating in. So they would have been trying to the very last second to minimise any impact on the bridge or the vessel.
I'm just looking at the live pictures now, because we can see properly what remains there, because it is daylight in Baltimore now. I mean, the recovery and rescue operation, Sean, you can only imagine the scale of it, because you've got all of that debris in the water now as well for those teams to contend with.
Absolutely. It's a mammoth task. And, you know, as the fire department representative said there, it's very tidal there, you know. So the water is moving, you know, up to maybe 3 to 4 knots. Like, and that sounds very small in regards to maybe a car on the road. But that water, that amount of water, the body of water moving at 3 to 4, nearly 5 miles an hour, it's very difficult, because everything on the water is moving at the same time. The debris is moving, the casualties are moving, the crafts, the rescue crafts are moving, the divers have to contend with that speed in the water. So it's everything is difficult, you know, and thankfully now they have daylight to work with, because things are much more improved in the daylight. Obviously, visibility is improved and, visual communication and things like that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully now daylight will assist them. But it's a very, very difficult task. And, you know, my own experience in the rescue services over 20 years, allows me to speak to that, I suppose. It's very difficult and you know, it's very sad, of course.
What sort of crew do you think would be manning a vessel that size?
Most likely a multinational crew, as all merchant vessels really nowadays are. It probably would have been in the region of maybe 20 to 25 people on board. So, you know, highly experienced people. You know, you don't get to be the captain or the chief officer or the chief engineer on one of those vessels without a lot of experience. Rigorous training, retraining. I myself recently was on another course, you know, a manned model course, we call it. We go to a lake with scaled down vessels to practice manoeuvres. And you know, nowadays we're in 2024, so the regulation is so stringent, and retraining and again, lots of aids to navigation, and the pilots would have had their own independent navigation and probably an iPad or a laptop, so that if there was any issue on board the vessel, that they would have an independent source. So a lot of factors involved in keeping a ship like this going, and highly experienced personnel on board.
So obviously the first job is to get the people who are on board that vessel and other people who may have been using the bridge to safety. That work is ongoing, as we heard there earlier. But then you'll have the task of getting the containers, 9,000 of them, off that vessel and moving the vessel itself. Like, where do you even begin with something like that?
That's huge, and I suppose, you know, people will remember the very, very high profile Costa Concordia cruise ship, which was, you know, a huge maritime incident in recent times. But a container ship like that, the first thing is to preserve life and environmental disaster. So to prevent that, and to tackle the the recovery and the salvage of the vessel and its cargo to minimise any further damage to obviously to people or to the environment. And then, of course, it's a large ship. Whatever condition she's in, is she still seaworthy? Can she be towed? On all of the cargo, then, you know, you think of it, over 90% of everything we eat or use in Ireland and in the UK and across Europe comes to us by sea. So somebody owns something in that container, whether it be an Amazon parcel or something heading for one of the sports shops in Ireland. It could be anything. And so that will then go on for many, many months and probably years into legal battles and stuff. So what's happened this morning now will have a huge knock-on effect for so many different people.
Mm-hmm. And that is a very big and important port, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah, huge. Like any ship that's servicing these types of container ships is hugely important, not just to the local economy, but to the economy of the other ports that ship visits, because, as I say, it has a knock-on effect. So if you've ordered something online, let's say that's due to come on that container ship, well, then there will be a knock-on effect. So it's very, very important, mm-hmm. very strategic in the US economy in particular.
Because the work to get that debris out of the water and make that safe again so that vessels can pass through, I mean, are you looking at a timeline of weeks or even months before it's operational again, that stretch of water?
Yeah, I would say probably not months. Potentially, you know, these people will be working very, very hard now to try and obviously clear the waterway to let cargo and other vessels pass. So they'll have all the resources they can possibly pull in there. So I would say a matter of weeks at the most. You know, they'll be really hot on this now and trying to get the salvage operation carried out as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm. But as you look at that footage this morning when you saw it, your first thought is for the people who were on board that vessel, because I'm sure it's everyone's worst nightmare in your position.
Absolutely, Claire. You know, and there will be, right from the very word go, there will be all sorts of speculation now regarding what went wrong, who did what wrong, and inevitably there will be a blame culture. But, you know, we all go to work as everybody else in their own job do. They go to do their best and to do things to the highest level. So that exactly what you said, my first thoughts were with the people involved and, you know, with the stress and pressure that they will now be under, of course, to deal with this in their own personal and professional lives.
Sean, thanks very much for taking us through it all. Sean Boyce, Master Mariner there, based in Rosslare Harbour. Coming up next, we'll be talking about the science of sound with Dr. Shane Bergen.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.